Rock News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 22nd day of October, Anno Domini 2006. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
We'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use. So give us a call at the numbers you just heard on 50,000 watt, 1180 WHAM. And in the meantime, here's some news. We start with an Apple warning. There seems to be a Windows virus in the latest video iPods. Apple has warned Windows users that a very small number of its latest video iPods have a virus. Less than 1% of the devices are affected. Just 25 reports concerning the problem have been received by Apple so far. And as we know, that's, you know, 1/10 of 1% is the average number of people who actually catch a virus. So
Mac was quick to jump out there and say, listen,
well,
it came from the PC.
Yeah, and they got a little blasted in the nets, too, for saying, it's too bad Microsoft's operating system isn't more secure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, you know what? You take the blame. It's their fault. It's their mistake. They should take the blame. And
they
not...
did. Well, they did. They did do that. And then, sort of in the next sentence, virus got into. They have a PC on their assembly line to make sure that the iPods work on PCs.
Since the majority of iPod sales are made to Windows users.
Yeah, and they come FAT32 formatted, so you can use them on your PC.
Right.
And then we're sorry a virus got out there. We've taken steps to prevent the problem from happening. They gave links on their website to antivirus software that you can run to clean your iPod. And then said it's too bad Microsoft can't make their operating system better.
Yeah, right. They did say, however, of course, it's the first time this has happened to us, and we want to be very open and upfront about what's happening. They've been working around the clock on this, discovering the root cause. So, bad. Apple put a virus on iPods.
Well,
good.
They admitted it. Yeah, they allowed
Never mind that. The point is they put it on. It's on their iPods. Good is they owned up to it. Bad is they then tried to shuffle the problem off, so to speak. Shuffle, get it? Onto Microsoft.
And speaking of shuffles, this is only the fifth and a half generation iPod video, and it's been cleaned on all the currently shipping models. So it's the models that shipped after September 12th for a few weeks.
Right, but it's all fixed. So if you bought a video iPod around September 12th or in the month of September, you might want to check, make sure your antivirus stuff is up to date. And your system is clean, because it's very possible that you got an iPod with a virus on it. Let's go right to the phones now. Our first caller is Victor from Irondequoit. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. Since we've had our two computers networked, we haven't seen any blocked intrusions on Zone Alarm. And we're just curious if you have any ideas why.
Now, do you have it on like a Linksys router?
It's a wireless.
Links as well. Well, you've got a firewall there,
right,
too, so you're kind of running double firewalls.
Oh, yeah, that
right.
Router.
So everything's being caught by the router firewall itself and not even getting into the Zone Alarm. That's a nice verification that your router firewall is working correctly.
Now, you still may get alarms from Zone Alarm for outbound connection if something does get into your computer and then tries to make an outbound internet connection, then Zone Alarm will catch that. So it's a good idea to run Zone Alarm on PCs, even behind a hardware firewall.
Beautiful. Thank you very much.
There you go. All right. And that's, we find people doing that a lot. They'll run multiple firewalls. I suppose it's not necessarily a bad thing.
It makes it easy to misconfigure and stop real things from working.
Well, let's put it this way. You don't want to run like a Norton firewall and Zone Alarm and be on, say, a Linksys.
Right.
Because then you're going to have major issues. You're going to have blocking.
Right. And not only that, you've got, you're taking up a lot of CPU cycles for something you don't need anymore.
Right.
Our next caller is Barry from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Barry. What's your question?
Hi. I've got trouble with iTunes on my Windows machine.
Mm-hmm.
I've been using it for well over a year. I've bought hundreds of songs off of them, and it's all been working great. Then I tried to upgrade to the QuickTime version 7, and now I can't get anything to run. I can't get anything to install, and I have done everything. And what it gives me is an error, and it says one of my registry keys could not be opened, and it says check to see if you have permission. And I do have permission. I'm the administrator, only person using the machine. I see the keys. And I've done everything, including turn off all my antivirus. I've uninstalled completely everything and reinstalled. And no matter what, during the install, I get so far, and then it comes up with this error and says, could not open this key. I went to Google and looked at other people having all the same sort of problems, and I have spent about 4 hours on this thing now trying to get it to load. And I figured I would give you guys a call before I spend another 4 hours.
Did you install the QuickTime update separate from the iTunes update?
No, I went right to iTunes.com, and then I hit the install button there.
So you got the 701 iTunes, which comes with the QuickTime 713.
That is correct. That's the one. And it goes about 90%, and then it comes back with this error, and the error says it could not open the key, and it gives me the key, and it's a QuickTime player key. I went to look at those keys, and even though I've got QuickTime uninstalled, I've got, oh boy, like 8 QuickTime player keys still in there. I didn't know if I should go and hack those out or not, and I've never just hacked something out of the registry without asking.
Now, you're trying to do the update right from the website as opposed to downloading
the
file?
No, I downloaded it to my desktop, and then I hit the install, and everything looks fine until it gets near the end.
Hold on.
Yeah, stay on the line. We got to take a quick break, but we'll talk to you when we come back. We'll take a quick break. We have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. We've got... me, Nick Francesco. We got Barry on the line back in just a couple minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it is 18 minutes after the hour. We have Barry on the line. Barry, you still with us?
I sure am.
Excellent. Barry's been having a problem upgrading to QuickTime 7. And I believe Steve has some chances, some possibilities for it.
Well, it sounds like it's a fairly common Windows problem. When you uninstall a program, it doesn't uninstall all the pieces of itself. I've posted a link on our website from Apple on how to completely remove iTunes and QuickTime going through the folders manually. It's after you do the add remove program for both iTunes and QuickTime.
And I did that. I did both of those.
Yeah. List of folders to go through to remove pieces of the programs, a list of register keys to remove.
Oh.
And then try to reinstall it itself separately.
That's what I need.
Yeah.
And I'll find that on your website now?
Yep, at soundbites.org under links, and then I heard about a website on your show.
Okay, great. I'll go look right now. I hope this does it.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Sure. Before we get back to the phones, you should all know that Microsoft has now released Internet Explorer 7. IE7 takes major strides in reversing Microsoft's neglect of their browser over the last several years.
Can we all say it's about time?
Exactly.
I mean, they're sitting there, because my wife says, oh, earlier this week when this came out, says, oh, they're bringing that out. Yeah. So? She says, well, it's got all these great features. I says, and Netscape and Firefox have had it for a couple years
Yeah,
now.
Those of you who have been using Firefox or Opera won't find anything new in this release, but it does finally bring the Internet Explorer up to parity with those, so it's pretty nice.
And interestingly enough, less than 24 hours after the release of IE7, the first exploit was discovered.
Yeah, we've got something about that, too, and we'll get to that in a minute. They have fixed that already, too. Microsoft has closed the distance, so the new browser has... The big thing for all of those of us who write websites is that the new browser has much improved support for web standards. It's also much more secure. Right now, however, the browser will run only on Windows XP Service Pack 2 and there will be a Vista version that ships with Vista. You can download it immediately. If you have Windows XP Service Pack 2, you can download it immediately at Microsoft.com/IE, and the update will be available through Windows Update in the next few weeks. Tabbed browsing, quick tab feature, RSS feeds, delete browsing history is available, so you can do that. There are some anti-phishing capabilities. Internet Explorer will be available for users of genuine Windows XP Service Pack 2, Windows XP 64-bit edition, and Windows Server 2003 Service Pack 1. The rest of you won't mind because you're all using Firefox anyway. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I really enjoy the show.
Thank you.
I've got a couple of security questions.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running Frontier DSL, and I'm very happy with it. I do the Tango regularly with updates, but my Norton antivirus ran out, and rather than renew it, I switched over to AVG.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times when AVG seems to interfere with my ability to get into my email. Sometimes they use IE, sometimes they use Firefox, but either way, sometimes it interferes. Now, I know that Frontier offers as part of their DSL package just free use of anti-spam and antivirus and mm-hmm. a firewall. And I'm wondering if I should switch to those or try to run those things in addition to, let's say, AVG.
What sort of problems do you have when you're running AVG?
Well, it turns itself on sometimes, and a little window pops up and says connecting to POP3 server. And that seems to interfere with the ability of Firefox to get to the Frontier, to pull the email out of Frontier.
Well, Firefox doesn't do that. Firefox just is a web browser. It doesn't do email. You'd have to be using Thunderbird for email.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. I meant Thunderbird.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And if you then turn off AVG, do you get through?
Yes, I do.
I'm wondering, what about your settings? Now, you're also using Zone Alarm?
Yes.
I'm wondering about his settings on Zone Alarm, whether for the Thunderbird, whether he's set those too high. You know, in the program control?
Mm-hmm.
You might want to check in there on your settings for how you've got your security blocked or unblocked or partially blocked. In the Zone Alarm.
AVG shouldn't scan the email before it comes in, though, doesn't it?
No,
does it? It waits till after it gets in, then scans.
Yeah, I'm a little.
That's why I'm wondering whether his Zone Alarm settings are messed up.
Well, that may be, but there are times when I'll click on Thunderbird, AVG pops up, and it says that it's trying to connect, and then I get timed out on Thunderbird.
Tell you what you can do is open up the Zone Alarm, and you can go over into the program control and remove both Firefox and Thunderbird from the program so the settings are cleared out. And then when you reopen Firefox or Thunderbird, Zone Alarm is going to ask you, what do you want to do with these?
Now, do you have the AVG free or the AVG pay version?
AVG free.
Free. And do you have the anti-spyware and anti-spam or just the antivirus?
Just the antivirus. I'm using Frontier's anti-spam.
All right, because AVG has an anti-spam program that reads your email server, but the antivirus program doesn't. So, you know, it's probably not AVG asking to connect to the mail server.
It's probably the spam control from Frontier, if that's scanning the emails.
Be.
Try uninstalling that temporarily.
Okay.
And because that might be doing the scanning of his emails as it's linking to see what spam's coming down.
Right.
You know how quite often it'll do the scan when it's coming down, and it'll say, we think this is potentially spam.
Yep.
And you've got to take some action on it. So, yeah, try uninstalling that. You might have too much control on.
Okie doke. Thank you very much, Gary. Our next caller is Dawn from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Dawn. What's your question?
Hi there. Well, about 2 months ago, I had a Airport Extreme wireless router installed, and it worked beautiful for a couple months. For the last 2 weeks, sometimes I have no signal. The icon is completely faded out. Other times I have a full signal. Other times one little bar, which means I can get on, but it's very, very, very slow. And I just don't understand why it keeps fluctuating so much as to
what kind of computer do you have? What operating system?
Apple G4, and it's a 10. System is 10.3, I believe.
What model computer is it?
It's a Mac G4.
That's the processor. Is it a PowerBook, an iBook, a MacBook?
Oh, no. It's a desk, big desk monitor.
A PowerMac.
No. Oh, God, I don't know. Let me look. I'm looking. Where can I find about this Mac?
You can't.
This Mac OS.
You have to, right. That just tells you about the software. You have to know what model computer you've purchased. Generally speaking, something like that often means interference in the wireless network. If you have any 2.4 gigahertz portable phones, if the kitchen is between the computer and the base station, all the metal in the kitchen can mess it up.
No, it's on the same floor.
Microwave ovens can mess it up.
Wireless routers in one bedroom, the computer's in another.
I would then guess it's the antenna inside the computer has come loose, or possibly inside the base station. So if the antenna is not plugged in tight, then it's as if there is no antenna, so it can't reach the signal.
Oh, but that would cause it to sometimes not give me any signal at all.
Sure, because it's loose. Have you by any chance?
You mean in the hard drive when they put the card in?
Not in the hard drive. No, in the computer itself.
Yes.
On the wireless card, you have to connect an antenna to the wireless card.
Okay,
so that may be loose or not in tight enough.
Did put the card in, you know, and why for 2 months it would work perfect and not have any problem, but so maybe it has loosened.
It's worked its way loose, yeah, with the heating and cooling.
All right, so I need to have them come back and just check.
Or just pop the cover off and try to put
have somebody check it. It's always possible that, for example, if you moved something or bumped something, you loosened it. That often happens, and certainly with the heat and cold cycle, you get that sort of thing. But somebody ought to be able to fix that by just checking that antenna pretty quickly. We're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes. We have, of course, Dave Enright, Steve Way. Very, very quiet. It's Steve Way. Wob Winton.
Weber season.
We have Wob Jason in with the news and Wevo and sports, and I'm Nick Francesco, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with sound bites on a Wevo 80 WHAM. Wes, can we web it? Welcome back, everybody. It is 32 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
Give us a call. The number is 222-1180 if you're in the 585 area code. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180. And, of course, Verizon Wireless customers, it's Star 1180.
I think you need to get out, Rob. Definitely need to get out a little more.
You know, once in a while we find some.
Having a party in your mind, you know, all the time.
Rob's boogieing in the background.
I don't have enough coffee yet.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. All right. Microsoft.
Somebody forgot to make a pot when they emptied the last one.
Yeah. Microsoft says McAfee is both inaccurate and inflammatory. Microsoft said on Friday that security software firm McAfee's criticism of its provision of security information on the new Vista operating system was inaccurate and inflammatory. McAfee is one of several software security firms who are concerned that Microsoft is waiting too long to give them information they need to protect customers using Microsoft's new Windows 64-bit Vista. McAfee's lawyer in Brussels said earlier that Microsoft has failed to live up to hollow assurances to carry out the promises. Basically, the deal is this. Windows is coming out. Microsoft is coming out with a new version of Windows called Vista. It will be completely different from everything else. They are including their own antivirus software in it. In addition, they are very, very slow on getting the information to the other antivirus makers as to how to use the new, how to connect into the new software, into the new version of Vista. So Microsoft is being accused by McAfee in particular of dragging their heels on purpose so that their own antivirus will take over from McAfee's antivirus. Microsoft has, of course, reacted strongly to this. Microsoft says they are being even-handed in developing the needed software, which should happen in the months ahead. Translation, long after Vista hits the marketplace. Microsoft said Thursday it could change Vista to deal with the concerns of security software makers only when an update came out. So in other words, they've created this thing to not deal with external security makers. For their first update, they may or may not fix it so that it does run with them. This is just going to be another long and boring lawsuit.
Well, this is one that a lot of folks are going to sit there and demand then, if they're ordering a new machine and say Vista is coming out, that they're going to sit there and say, no, I don't want that because now I got to turn everything over to Microsoft. Hello, they're not an antivirus program company.
Right.
So why try to do something that you don't do normally?
Well, because then they just take over the market. They just want it all.
And historically, the same thing happened when XP came out, is that Symantec and the other antivirus companies were all upset about Microsoft didn't release enough information about XP, so their products wouldn't be compatible enough, and so they were trying. It was kind of funny. One week they were suing to prevent XP from coming out because then Norton wouldn't work,
right.
And then like the next week they were suing to hurry up and get XP out so we can make Norton work.
Right, exactly.
All Vista looks like is XP on steroids.
Yeah, so far the only thing that's truly new that I've found so far is how each and every program can have their own volume control. So I can
big
have,
deal.
Well, but I'm saying, you know, all the other stuff I've already seen in Linux, I've already seen in the Mac, but it will be new to those people who've never used any operating system but Windows ever. So I suppose that's nice. But they're truly just playing catch up so far. All the innovative stuff that they promised us 5 years ago when they first announced Vista has been taken out one after the other. Maybe. But there are a couple of nice things about it. I mean, it's got an awful pretty interface. I don't know that that's worth $200 of my money, but it is awful pretty.
But here's the thing, though. I mean, for this pretty interface, I got to now turn around and say I just got a Pentium 4 that's only a year old. And now you're turning around and telling me, all right, I've got to get even a bigger processor, at least a gig of memory, 2 is better. A super high-end graphics card so I can, you know, display all these QC graphics now that, you know, are coming with the operating system whether I want them or not. And I've got to have more hard disk space. And, oh, by the way, now that I've even paid more for all this system and operating system, a lot of the programs that will run on my old XP machine, oh, by the way, won't run under Vista.
So you should plan
and by the way, you have to relearn everything. Believe me when I tell you, it's all different.
Well, I know. I've played with it.
It's all different. And that, as we've often said, is a window of opportunity for the Mac and for Linux. I think more for Linux than the Mac because people already have the hardware. If you're going to have to reformat your hard drive and relearn everything, because right now everybody is saying upgrading is iffy, just like they did with 98 and 95 and everything else, and XP. Upgrading is iffy. If you're going to put it on a machine, you're really going to want to start with a clean machine.
Definitely.
And if you're going to do that, and you're going to learn a whole new operating system, you're going to learn a whole new way of doing things, and you're going to do all of that stuff, why add to that additional hardware when you can throw Linux on that same box and learn a whole new operating system from scratch for free?
Yeah, and all the parts with it, you know, like you say, OpenOffice and all these others, and everything still works with it.
Well, we'll be continuing. I've been playing
with Vista,
and it's pretty, but it's not any prettier than my Mac is. It's not any prettier than my my Linux box is. It's pretty. Anyway, our next caller is Josh from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Josh. What's your question?
Hey, I recently bought a new sound card because my other sound card had some driver problems, so I installed it, and then I installed the drivers for it, and after a few seconds, my computer froze, and then I got a blue screen of death.
Did you uninstall the drivers for the first sound card first?
No, I disabled them. I didn't know how to uninstall the drivers for that.
You have to run the uninstall program that came with that card.
Okay.
So it's probably a driver conflict.
Yeah, most likely that's what's wrong.
And the other thing, too, like we always say, though, too, before you even go, once you wipe these out and before you go to reinstall it, go up to the website for that manufacturer of this new sound card, because 10 to 1 odds, there's an update sitting there to update that update.
Right. I think what you need to do at this point, Josh, reboot the system, and as it's booting, get into safe mode, and I guess you do that by
F8.
F8 key. Keep tapping the F8 key. until you get into safe mode. Boot into safe mode. From there, you should be able to remove the driver, then reboot into regular mode, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah, use the remove button or uninstall button in Device Manager rather than the disable button.
Right. Uninstall that device driver. Every sound driver you can find, get rid of all of them. Then go back into regular mode, download the new device driver and install it. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And it is 44 minutes after the hour. We were talking earlier about Vista being attacked. Microsoft has blocked a rootkit exploit that hit Vista. When Vista first came out, a woman named Joanna Rutkowska, who's a virus researcher, found a way around it immediately. Microsoft has, in fact, blocked that. The latest release, RC2, release candidate 2, has fixed it. Unfortunately,
it's something that's not even for sale.
Right. Unfortunately, it seems that the way the exploit is being blocked could be problematic and could cause application compatibility issues. Well, we already know there are going to be application compatibility issues with Vista. Rutkowska believes this does not adequately fix the issue because legal sign drivers can still be hijacked. Microsoft is working on keeping the operating system secure. They've already touted this as the most secure version of Windows ever. And I guess we'll see, since she's already found some problems in it before it even hits the streets. So we'll keep you informed to make sure.
But it could be the most secure version ever.
That's very true.
And still have a lot of holes.
Exactly. But we'll see what happens as time goes on. We'll keep you informed. Our next caller is Bert from Palmyra, New York. Hey, Bert. What's up?
Hello. Great show, guys. Having some trouble with Ubuntu. Ubuntu?
Yeah.
Can't get it to connect to the internet.
How are you trying to connect?
With Firefox.
No, I'm sorry. What are you doing this over a modem or over a dial-up line or over a broadband? Are you using wireless?
Broadband, hardwired Roadrunner. The cable comes direct into the house, directly to Roadrunner's modem. From the modem, direct to a Linksys router. From the router to our two computers. My wife's computer is fine, getting online, no problem. I just put a fresh hard drive in with nothing but Xubuntu on it, on board, and I just can't get it to connect.
All right. If you go in as you're running Xubuntu, so if you go to an Xterm window and use the sudo command, S-U-D-O, and type sudo ifup, which for interface up, space ETH0 for Ethernet 0. You may have to do IF down at 0 first. But if you do that, it'll ask you for your password. That sudo does that and then allows you to run as if you were root. And if you do sudo IF up at 0, it should bring up the Ethernet connection. If it does not, you've got one of two things going on. Either there's a bad connection cable, something in the connection somewhere, or you are using a hard drive that Xubuntu does not a hard drive, a network card.
Ethernet card. Yeah, how can a hard drive screw up an Ethernet?
I was up until 3 a.m., okay, and I'm a little bit behind the times here. Or you're using an Ethernet card that Xubuntu doesn't recognize.
Okay, so try sudo if up or down.
Well, you might have to do IF down first if it tried to bring it up and couldn't.
Okay.
So basically, you've got this card, and what it's saying is it's either up, working, or down, disconnected. And you can do that manually for each of your cards. So by doing sudo IF down at 0 and then sudo IF up at 0, you will definitely bring it down and then bring it back up again. And if it doesn't make the connection, it could easily be a bad cable. I would check that first. I'd also check the link lights before I bother to do any of this. Make sure you're getting a link light in the back of your computer and a link light on the router. Yeah. That says you've got, at least, the system thinks you've got a good cable at either end.
Right.
So I would start with that, and if you have those, then do what I said, and let us know what that brings you.
Okay. My original The motherboard on this has just a riser for the Ethernet connection. Both lights were lit for that. Wasn't working. I grabbed an old Ethernet card from one of our other machines, plugged into that. It's going to ETH2. That's lit on the Linksys thing. I'll go to your command line stuff and try that out.
Right. Try either F0 or F2. And see what happens. And then let us know. All right, our next caller is Gene from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gene. Hi. What's your question?
Hi. I'm removing Kodak EasyShare from my computer.
Yes.
And I went through all the procedures to get it out, but I still have, when I open up a file with pictures, the Kodak icon on it. And what happened is that I'm trying to save all my pictures to a disk, and when I do that, I could view the pictures on the TV, but when I put the disk back into my computer, I don't get anything.
That's because your computer still thinks to use EasyShare to open those pictures, and you don't have EasyShare anymore.
Correct.
So you need to tell the computer to use a different program.
Yeah, the file association.
Right. Click, find one picture file somewhere, left-click on it, hold the shift key down and right-click on it, and then you'll get an open with command. And you can
in pick, the drop-down menu.
In the drop-down menu. And you can pick the program you want to open that that file with.
See, I have HP now. Smart View, or it's called HP Photo Imaging. I'd like to show them in there.
Fine. That's how you do it. Left-click on a picture. Right-click
shift,
on it while
right-click.
You're holding down the shift key.
Mm-hmm.
And from the drop-down menu, pick Open With. You'll see a list of all the programs on your hard drive. Pick the HP software. And from then on, you should be fine. We got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We got a big problem.
Let's go.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 54 minutes after the hour, give us a call. 585-222-1180. 800-295-1180. Star 1180 for Verizon Wireless customers. This Tuesday, the final version of Firefox 2.0's web browser will be released. It is Firefox 2.0. It will be available for free download on Mozilla's webpage sometime on Tuesday afternoon. New features of Firefox 2.0 include built-in anti-phishing controls, built-in RSS and XML feed viewing capabilities. And here's the big one for all of you Soundbites Forum and Ask Nick Forum users, a new built-in inline spell checker. So for those of you who've been complaining that I don't give you a spell checker, now you'll have your own if you're running Firefox. I've been playing with it a little bit. It's awfully nifty. It's fast. It has all the features. It's very cool. You should definitely give it a try. Get yourself off of Internet Explorer and on to Firefox 2.0. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Jack from Waterloo, New York. Welcome, Jack. What's your question?
Yes, I have a desktop and a laptop, both running XP on Roadrunner, and I have browsers on both of them. I have Internet Explorer and Firefox. On the ESPN website, no problem on the desktop with either browser. But when I go to the laptop and I try to get ESPN website on Internet Explorer, it comes up for a fraction of a second, goes off. If I go to Foxfire, it picks it up fine. I've checked in for blocked websites. There are none. And I'm curious, what would be doing that?
When you go to it with Internet Explorer and you say it comes up for a second, does the whole browser crash?
Yes. No, the browser stays up. I just lose the website. The website comes up almost full screen, and then that website goes on, but the browser's still there.
ESPN does a lot of stuff with Flash. What it sounds like is you've got some sort of Flash incompatibility on the laptop with Internet Explorer.
You might want to try clearing out the cache.
Yeah, that might do it. On the other hand, the good news is you're using Firefox.
Yes.
Which is certainly a superior browser anyway.
And I like it.
There you go. So, but that's probably what's happening. It's some sort of incompatibility with Flash. Either a driver, registry key, something in the cache. Could be any one of 100 different things, but that's what would do it.
That's it.
Okay. All right.
You also might want to update your version of Flash. I know Adobe just came out with Flash 9 recently. But then that might be the problem. Maybe Flash 9 is too new, and you have to go down to Flash 8 until all the other websites update themselves.
Right, right, right. Oh, the cool news, of course, is that there will be a Flash 9 player for Linux, finally. Now, the bad news is it won't work in my 64-bit version of Linux. But, hey, at least it'll be out there.
They're up there,
They're planning on not doing one, they say.
Oh, really?
Maybe they'll change their minds.
Yeah.
The problem is they have no 64-bit version of anything yet. I'm sure they will, but they don't right now.
This, too, will probably change in time, especially with Vista coming out.
Yeah, we've got, a minute? Tom from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Nice. Great job.
Thanks.
Just bought a brand-new Gateway 64-bit dual processor, and I also bought PC Cillin because it was highly recommended. I got home, set up the computer, and it's got McAfee on there, six-month trial version.
Right.
Would you keep McAfee on, or would you just uninstall it and immediately go to PC Cillin?
Uninstall it, and just, you know, before it even gets into your system, because it's just more entries in the registry, you know, just go ahead, ditch it, and go right with PC Cillin.
Good enough. Okay, thanks, guys.
Yep.
Thanks. That's something we have to remind everybody about. Often when you buy a new machine, it comes with an amazing amount of stuff, but a lot of it is trial versions of software. You have to be very careful to realize what's yours and what you're borrowing.
Oh, when we come back, I got a story for you. After
Oh, you've got a story?
About this. Oh, yeah.
Excellent. Dave's going to have a story for us, so we'll look forward to Story Hour.
Story Hour with Mr. Enright will be coming up after the break.
But we're going to take a break right now. Rob Jason is in to bring us news, weather, sports, all the truly interesting stuff that's going on. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave the Storyteller Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. It is 59 minutes after the hour on 1180 WHAM, and you are listening to the greatest computer show in the known universe. You know what that is, but say it all with me. It's, are you ready? One, two, three. It's Sound Bites. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes, so stay tuned.
Watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show, Sound Bites. Call the show at 222-1180, *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
At 6 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Sound Bites.
You know, like we were saying, though, they moved the thruway up towards the lake.
I've said this for years.
Then we wouldn't get any
snow.
All
this stuff happens north of the thruway. Move the thruway to Toronto, and suddenly we got beaches.
Yeah.
I don't know what your problem is. I don't know why nobody understands that but me. All right. Listen, you
were
too.
Were you a meteorologist in your past life or something? Just move the thruway up there. Suddenly we got beaches.
We got beaches.
Yeah.
We're here. It's done. Let me tell you a little bit about, let's do it this way. Let me tell you a little bit about what goes on at our website.
You're not sure what you are.
I don't know what I'm doing. It's Soundbites, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Every week, he'll do the, say go, he's got to go. Every week we do a poll. Last week's poll was about where you would like to have your office applications. 270 of you voted, making it number 194 in the all-time hit list, even though I ended it a day early, and for a day we had no poll.
Yeah, we noticed it.
Yeah, get over it.
Well, I got a number of emails.
Well, yeah.
Where is it?
Well, I screwed up. That's where it was, okay? Shut up.
Wait a minute. You've already voted. What do you care?
Yeah, right. 270 of you voted. 96% of you would like all your office applications on your computer, and only 12 of you would actually be willing to look at them through a web page. This week's poll is about YouTube. YouTube is no friend to copyright violators. People who post copyrighted material on YouTube shouldn't be surprised if the company makes no effort to protect them in a copyright battle. The video sharing site may hand over information on those who post video clips of movies and TV shows if they're accused of copyright infringement. that U2 will not cover up for an accused lawbreaker shouldn't come as a surprise. The company has consistently said it will obey the law and that it doesn't want copyrighted material on its site. That message is spelled out in YouTube's user agreement, as well as in a computer prompt that appears every time you upload a clip. The company says it has removed clips once it's been notified of copyright violation. In fact, they just removed 30,000 clips late last week.
That's become the controversy, not whether they remove copyrighted material, but it's the person doesn't have to prove they own the copyright. They just say, that's my copyright, and YouTube takes it off.
So that's
what
a problem.
If that person is lying? You know?
There's also the fact that YouTube gained much of its fame from the unauthorized posting of movie and TV clips. The big thing, however, is that up until now, nobody's cared. You sued YouTube. What did you get? A website. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, Google just paid them $1.6 billion.
In stock.
In stock. But the point is they got $1.65 billion, which, by the way, their stock is worth $600 a share.
One of the most overvalued stocks on the market.
Yes. Since the sale, companies have been making, entertainment companies have been making a lot of noise about their unwillingness to stand still while YouTube and others attract crowds with their property. So our poll is, I watch YouTube videos. The choices are all the time, pretty regularly, once in a while, rarely, Yoohoo. And simply because I've been getting complaints that I've taken off these two choices, the Macintosh and the Linux. So far, we've got 81 votes on the poll. Yoohoo is ahead with 36%, followed by rarely, followed by once in a while, followed by the Linux. Please feel free to vote in our polls. That's at soundbites.org. When you're done with voting on the poll, underneath it, you'll see a yellow box. You can click on the Give Us Your Opinion link. That will take you to my website, asknick.com. That's asknick.com. Oh, yes, that's classy. Thank you so much.
Need some more beans around that campfire.
Computers and fart sounds here on
Saddle.
Very nice.
Oh, when you get to be your age, I thought it was appropriate.
I appreciate that. I do. I appreciate
Nick,
that.
Nick, wait, I got to tell you something. We just got a call from somebody.
Congratulations.
Will you stop?
Oh, there's more.
Who wanted to know if you had a book out.
A book?
We've talked about writing a book for years.
I think it'd be a really good show. You know, I was thinking about it. I think it'd be a good idea for you guys to write a book.
If only you were a publisher.
Well,
that takes that part.
Some of the stories.
But thank you. Yes, we'd love to put out a book. At any rate, if you go to my website, asknick.com.
That's asknick.com.
Same basic idea.
I've got some sound effects that I'm just waiting to use.
Yeah?
But I'm afraid the FCC will come in here and be like, no. Turn off the lights. Go home.
But you can put in your opinion. So far, we've got 11 of them here so far. And when you're there, check it out. I do a newsletter three times a week and an emailed electronic newsletter and all kinds of other interesting and important stuff. So you should check that out. And then come back to Soundbites and check out the forums there where some of the niftiest people on earth hang out. And now, kids, are you going to do your story first?
No, first.
Oh, first an announcement.
Yeah. First, I got to do a shameless plug.
Okay.
Because I think everybody should be aware of this. Believe it or not, besides working on computers, once in a while I donate my time. And one foundation I like doing a lot of work with is the Ronald McDonald House. And then this week, they're having their mega houseware sale, household sale. It's going to be at Southtown Plaza at the old Media Place store. And the sale is going to go on this Thursday from 10 to 8, Friday 10 to 8, and then Saturday. Now, here's the thing. It'll go a half-price sale from 10 to 12:30, and then they close the doors for a half hour, and then from 1 to 3, they have what they call the $5 bag sale.
That's everything, this coming weekend.
Yeah, this coming weekend. And I got to tell you, folks, this store is literally jammed-packed with a lot of stuff that some great folks all over the city have donated. It's really unique stuff. So if you're looking to, do up in an apartment or buy
and the money all
thing,
goes to a good cause.
Yeah, and it's all going to help the kids.
Right.
I mean, that's what, that's why I donate my time. As a matter of fact, I know for sure if you want to stop in, I'm going to be there all day Saturday at the front door doing security.
Right.
Which I volunteer every year.
He'll be the guy with the big bat.
Yeah.
And now, kitties, speaking of kitties, gather around, kids. Sit down, get comfy. hug Mr. Teddy because it's time for Uncle Dave's Story Hour.
You know,
and so here, kids, without further ado, is our friend, Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave?
Oh, boy.
Uncle Dave! Uncle Dave!
You know, that's the fun about being in business for yourself. You know, a lot of folks say, oh, yeah, you got it made. And yeah, sometimes I do, and, you know, dealing with folks. But I literally had this one couple. The machine got, you know, totally trashed. The hard drive was bad. So I said, all right, bring your disk in. We'll reinstall it. So it happened to be an HP. So, you know, it goes through its normal thing, brand new hard drive. It puts everything back up there. And it puts all the icons and everything else.
As if you just bought it from the factory.
Exactly. So they're happy with that. Well, one of the icons that it puts back up there is a 60-day trial of Microsoft Office, along with some of the others. So I didn't go ahead and install it. And the couple come back, and they pick up the computer. And a few hours later, all of a sudden, I get a call. Where's my Word and Excel? Well, you didn't...
Didn't give me those disks.
You didn't give me those disks. Well, it was on the computer. I says, well, the only thing that came with it is this trial version. No. It was on there. Well, how long did you have it on? Well, my husband just installed it recently. You know, he clicked on that icon. I said, well, that's still only good for 60 days. No, you must have switched something. Because we had Microsoft Word on there, and it was working fine. I said, man, the only thing that came with it is a 60-day icon. Well, yeah, he clicked on that, and it was working. I said, yeah, you can go ahead and do that, but it's only going to be good for 60 days.
And you can't print. The demo will do everything except print, which doesn't make it very useful, but right. it's a good demo.
But, you know, so they're going back and forth like I'm cheating them out something.
Right.
I says, you gave me everything, right? Yes, that's everything. Then I put everything on there. There's only 60 days of this thing. Well, you must have done something. No, ma'am, I didn't. So she gets the husband on because I think she just wasn't listening. And I explained to him.
The husband probably stole it from work?
No, he had just recently, because they were using OpenOffice, which he didn't bother telling me because, well, I couldn't get the computer up. And so to quick do something, they clicked on that 60-day thing again to get it back
so
up.
So they got another 60 days.
Yeah, so they can get another 60 days, but it's going to go. He goes, don't worry, I'll take care of it. But it's like... Hello? A lot of these folks aren't taking the time, like on these trial periods, to take the time to realize once that time's up, you don't get a chance to ignore it and continue on. It stops working.
Right.
And that goes back to, because I had a very similar problem this week, that goes back to a higher level question is, remember where you put your disks. When you buy a computer, keep the disks handy someplace. You know, we've had several computers that come in like that. We reinstall the software, give us your disk. we'll do you the courtesy of putting your software back on, and the customer gets the computer home. Well, where's this program? You didn't give me that disk. What about this program? You didn't give me that disk either. I want it back.
Or they'll ask you to go ahead and install everything. Like you say, they don't have the disk.
Yeah, without defining everything.
And then say, well, don't you just have that around? Isn't that something you can just put on?
Yeah, just throw. Yeah, can you throw that $1,000 program on for me?
Or no, I'm just talking about the hardware.
Yeah,
you know, it might be for a modem or a network card or something, you know, unique. Can't you just? You must have that. You know how many different iterations of sound cards, video cards, scanners, and everything else.
Right.
We got to go looking for.
That takes another hour of labor to go dig around the internet and download those drivers. I don't want to pay for that.
Yep. There you go.
So if you'd have found the disk you have.
Right.
So everyone, please remember where your disks are.
Right.
And provide them when you take your computer in for service.
Or you guys ought to offer to put all the free stuff on OpenOffice. Would you like a copy of OpenOffice? Would you like a copy of Firefox? Would you like a copy of Thunderbird? We can do all that.
Any of the machines that I sell, that automatically goes on every machine. We put the AVG on there, the Zone Alarm, the SpyBot, the Adware, Firefox, and Thunderbird.
Yep.
Now, if you want to go ahead and uninstall them, go ahead.
Right.
But any of our machines start out with those products.
It's the way it should be.
Yeah.
All right. You've been listening to Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave, I got to go potty. Thank you very much for listening to Story Hour with Uncle Dave. And now, do we have time to go to the phones, or has Dave taken up the whole story hour? All right, we're going to go to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Buffalo, New York. Mike, what's up?
Hi there, guys. Good show.
Thanks.
Lost the processor about 3 weeks ago, and I replaced the processor and the heat sink with it. Got a better, little better heat sink with it. And one thing I noticed was that my son, my youngest, games for about, you know, he can game for like 3 to 6 hours.
Yeah.
And one thing I noticed, I was looking at to see how well the heat sink was doing, and I noticed that there's a big difference in processor temperature from when he's gaming to idle.
Yo, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been, you know, I was thinking, you know, if this makes sense to you. And I noticed also when he's done gaming, he's done. The machine shuts off immediately. You know what I mean? He gets off of it. And I've been asking him to, like, run the machine for, like, 5 minutes before he turns it off so that there's air movement across the heat sink.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah, okay. I'm glad I'm getting a lot of grief out of this one.
No, that's a very good idea. It's like cooling anything down. You know, before you shut it down, you want to cool it down. And that makes a lot of sense. The big thing is that when he's gaming, he's using 100% of the processor. The more of the processor you use, the more electricity goes through it, the more heat that gets generated. So it's completely understandable that the CPU would be much harder while he was gaming than it would be when it was idle. But you're right. Once he's done gaming, to leave it on for another 5 or 10 minutes or even half an hour, doesn't matter.
Mike, and you might also want to look into adding some extra fans into that unit.
And don't put your dust cover on it until it's cooled down enough, because you don't want to trap all that heat inside the computer.
Right. All right. We're going to take another break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco. At 19 minutes after the hour, at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham's Rush Limbaugh.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you are listening to Soundbites. Hey, for those of you who've been using Eudora, say bye-bye. Eudora, once one of the most popular email clients, is finally being retired. But instead of simply abandoning Eudora's customers, Qualcomm, the makers of both Eudora and cell phones, is partnering with Mozilla Corporation to create Penelope, a customized version of Mozilla's Thunderbird email client that will be optimized for Eudora customers. Penelope is being developed by half a dozen of Eudora's most experienced programmers. Their goal is to create a Eudora-friendly version of Thunderbird that will import their stored mail and contact lists and all of their Eudora settings, which, by the way, Thunderbird already does, by the way, because I've done that at least several times. Specifically by version 1.0, the following Eudora features will be ported: importing for mail, remapping of accelerator keys, settings, personalities, filters, major UI elements, unique Eudora message handling operations. That's the thing I miss. Yeah. I miss Eudora automatically did filtering, and I could play different sounds depending on what mail came in. And I'm looking forward to Penelope myself. The roadmap is still subject to change, but it depends on what Eudora users want. So actually, I'm looking forward to Penelope myself at this moment. We'll see what she has to say for herself when we get there. She's sitting around waiting for Odysseus to come home, and we'll see what the story brings for Penelope. Our next caller is Mike from Webster, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Hi, guys. Thanks. I enjoy your show a lot.
Thanks.
I have a wireless network is set up at home. I've had it for about 5 years now, and just yesterday, my computer, my wireless, my laptop cannot find it anywhere. So I went through and I obviously rebooted the computer. I unplugged both the DSL from Frontier and the wireless router, and then plugged it back in, you know, an hour later or something, or, you know, after I tried everything, and it still is not able to find it. I took my laptop into work, where we have a wireless network, and it found it immediately.
Now,
do
when
those just go bad?
No.
They can, since sometimes it's the antenna losing connection after, you know, heating and cooling cycles. We talked about that earlier with a different caller.
But when you take your laptop home and you tell it to search for networks,
right?
Does it find the network connection?
Not mine. It finds about 6 neighbors, but it doesn't find my...
Well, network. Then it clearly is your system. Now, you say you have DSL.
Correct.
Have you cycled the DSL modem itself? Turned that off for about half an hour?
Yes. I turned everything off overnight after I gave up last night and just came down and this morning, and when I tried
it sounds like you, if you're finding other people in the neighborhood.
It could be that your wireless router has coincidentally failed, or it could be that somehow the wireless broadcasting got turned off. There are several different security things you can do with wireless routers, and one of them is to turn off the broadcasting of the name. So then other people don't happen to find it if they're looking. But if you type the name of the wireless network into your computer, it will find it.
Have you done anything?
So you might, you might want to hardwire the computer into the router and go into the router setup screens and see if there's anything in there.
In there on my one, I mean, the router works for the one that's connected. It's wired in, you know.
Right. So it's just the wireless.
I'm in the setup part, but I don't see anything like that. I even took off the security for a little while to see if.
It might be called SSID broadcast or something like that. So it broadcasts the name, or just wireless on and off could be.
Right,
yeah.
That may, it may be that wireless got turned off, or it may just be that the wireless has failed.
Okay.
Does it have a separate external antenna on it?
Yes.
You can try unscrewing those and screwing those back in.
Is this a Linksys?
I haven't tried that.
Is this a Linksys wireless?
Yes, it is. It's one of the old 11... whatever that is.
All right, one other thing you can do just to try it out, like Steve was saying, and you know, you're not sure of the settings and all that, on the back of the Linksys is a little reset button that you can set it back to the factory defaults.
Do you press and hold that for a while? Or?
You just hold it for about 5 seconds, it'll recycle, have all the computers off, and then after that recycles, shut it off, and then bring everything back up and see if that revives it.
Okay. And then if that doesn't work, most likely...
Then, yeah, you're looking to replace them.
It's time for a good 54G router.
Yeah,
I'm ready. All right. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Our next caller is Charlotte from Canisius, New York. Welcome, Charlotte. What's your question?
Hi. I love your show. You guys have been doing a great job.
Thank you.
I'm having a problem with Firefox printing. We had the repairman who came in and put in our DSL for us, downloaded Firefox for us, and... it's been handy, except that when we go to print, we can't print anything.
What happens when you try?
Well, we get the normal response on the computer as we would with Internet Explorer, and it lets us select a printer, and everything looks good on the computer, but then nothing happens.
What have you opened your print queue to see what's happening in there?
Yes, and
is there a job in the queue?
No. No, it says, I can't remember what it would tell me, but it basically that it's printing has been done or completed or something like that.
So it thinks it's printing and doesn't.
Yeah.
Now, will it print all right, say, out of Internet Explorer?
Or other programs?
Mm-hmm.
Prints fine.
That's weird, because printing is a system function. Yeah. Shouldn't have anything to do with a browser.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Is this any page you try?
Yes.
And the printer is set to be online?
Well, I guess so, because I can...
Well, if you go into control panel into your printers.
Okay.
There should be a little check mark next to your printer.
Okay.
If you right-click on it, make sure that also it's not set to offline.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that would cause the jobs to pile up in the queue and never print.
Well, if it's offline, sometimes it'll even... yeah. Not even get them to the queue.
There is a printing preference in the browser to print backgrounds. So, like you're on a page that has like a light blue background, you don't want to print that light blue background, but it should still print the text that's on the
page. Other thing you might try to do is to delete your cache.
Okay.
It is possible that there is some JavaScript thing in there that's preventing printing from happening. So drop your cache and try that. Let us know.
Okay, now how do you do that?
It's in the settings.
Okay, in settings, and
yeah.
Then go into cache?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, depending on which version you have, edit, preferences would do that, and then...
Advanced, maybe? Advanced, I'm opening my Firefox now.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me.
Okay, I'll play around with that and give it a try. Thank you very much.
Yeah, let us know how you make out.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Very possible that that's where the problem is.
Okay, I've got mine open. It's under the privacy tab, under the cache tab.
Right. All right, our next caller is Phil from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. This is a first-time caller here.
Thanks.
I listen to your show a lot, but I've got a Dell Latitude C610 laptop. And it's been working great for a couple years, and all of a sudden, when I try to bring it up, I get nothing on the screen, and it just quits. But I get the caps lock light blinks 10 times. The power light is on. It looks like it's trying to access the hard drive, and then it quits.
That's probably a dead hard drive.
But it still should come up and say OS not found.
Yeah, nothing comes
on
up
a dead hard drive.
Not if it's trying to do the BIOS check.
Is this a laptop or desktop?
Laptop, Latitude laptop.
Power supply, not feeding AC into it, so the battery thinks it's dead and can't
boot. The battery light comes up, it's blinking that it's charged. I've had it on AC and DC, you know. The battery light's flashing green. When it comes up, the power light comes on, like I said. The looks like it's trying to access the CD drive, as well as the hard drive light flashes green.
Yes, it's doing all the pre-diagnostics or post-diagnostics.
But somebody's telling me it's a motherboard. I tried to reset the memory in it.
Could be. Does this have a conveniently removable hard drive, CD drive?
Yep, I can pull it right out. I pull that out, put it back in.
Well, pull it out and boot the machine, and then it should boot to an ordinary Windows, well, not Windows screen, a BIOS screen that says OS not found or operating system not found.
Okay, if I pull the hard drive out, just leave it out and try to boot it without the hard drive in at all.
That would point to either RAM or the logic board.
Okay.
Yeah.
I tried reseating the RAM. That's what they said, try that. Try to reseat the memory.
Yeah.
But usually RAM, you get a different type of error message.
The other thing, too, is does it have a floppy drive?
No. Well, not that I have one here. All I got is a CD in it.
All right. Well, another thing you could do, depending on the boot order, is if you've got another PC, is make a bootable CD.
Yep.
And see if it'll at least boot off to that and get you to, like, a D prompt or that.
Yeah, what if I use one of those utility programs? Those boot automatically.
Yeah, by removing the hard drive and trying to boot it, you'll eliminate the hard drive as a possible suspect.
Just to make sure that the, you know, it's not the logic board.
All right, well, I'll try that. See
and of course, for memory, run memtest.
It won't even boot.
I can't get anything on that.
Yeah, it won't even boot far enough to run a testing program.
Nothing to come up on the screen.
Yeah.
But
now, are you seeing any BIOS information or anything else?
Nothing. Nothing on the LCD at all. It's not giving me any beeps. Like,
plug an external monitor in. Maybe it's not the computer. Maybe it's your display.
I'll try that. I got an external monitor. I'll plug it in the back.
There you go.
Yeah. The fire with the F7. Yeah.
Yeah.
FN7.
You might have a dead system. I hate to say it, but... Yeah.
Well, and laptops are notoriously...
That claim that they can fix it for $100 flat fee and send this laptop in. They got it on there. They'll fix the motherboard if that's the problem or something.
Well, that seems unlikely. I was just about to say that laptops are notoriously expensive to repair because of all the proprietary custom components in them. Yeah. A typical laptop motherboard is $300-$400 or more.
Yeah, and sitting there saying replace components. I mean, what a lot of folks don't realize is a lot of these components are surface mounted. And there's literally layers and layers that you don't see to build this motherboard that they can't, you know. Usually they've got to replace the whole thing. And if it's an older system, good luck in finding it. So be cautious.
Be cautious. All right. Our next caller is Matt from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Matt. What's your question?
Hey, Nick. Great show. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Nick, I got a thing called Virus Burst.
Virus Burst?
Yeah. It appeared as an icon that appears on the next to the clock down there, and it keeps flashing. It says that the system has got a grave error and all this stuff, and it almost like it's a spyware or something. Anyway, the problem is I tried to do your security tango yesterday, and I went through all the procedures that you outlined, and when I got into the safe mode, I couldn't find Stinger. It wasn't on the desktop.
Because you're on a different username. When you're in safe mode, you're on the administrator username, so Stinger will be on the desktop of your other username.
Put Stinger put all those files into a folder.
At the root of the hard drive, not on a desktop.
Right.
So if you go into your hard drive, you go into documents and settings, you go into your username folder, you go into your desktop folder, you'll find it. Because you're on a different user now.
Oh. I thought it was going to show up on the desktop.
No.
It will show up on the desktop if you log into the other user.
Okay.
Safe mode logs into the administrator user.
Right.
Which is different than your standard user.
Okay. All right. I'll try that. But anyway, what is this virus burst and how do you get rid of it?
A virus burst is a virus.
Claiming to be an antivirus.
Program.
How you got it, I have no idea.
How
I got in my pajamas, yeah. I'll never know.
You running, Norton, McAfee, AVG?
Norton. And yesterday when I went through this whole thing, I scanned Norton. They came up with nothing. I scanned something else, and that came up with nothing. And even your Stinger came up with nothing. You know, and everything is, I don't know.
It looks fairly new.
Yeah.
I found a couple of tools for virus burst removal, but I don't know how safe they are.
That's why I didn't do it. In fact, one of the tools for virus burst remover, I downloaded that. It went through a complete scan, and it came up with a bunch of things that weren't supposed to be there, right? And it says that I had to pay for this thing in order to get the removal. So I said, mm-hmm. No, I ain't going to do that. I'm going to call Nick first before I do that, because your Tango was supposed to take care of this stuff, right?
Well, the very newest ones, it doesn't take care of them. It's a game of leapfrog. What happens is the good guys fix all the viruses, the bad guys make new viruses. The good guys fix those, the bad guys make new ones, the good guys fix those. So it's a game of leapfrog, and you're on the wrong jump at the moment.
And I think StopZilla can remove virus burst, and that is a known one that we know of.
Well, there are two things called virus burst. There's a virus called virus burst, and then there's an antivirus sort of program called virus burst that puts up a whole bunch of fake virus things to talk you into buying the full version.
That sounds like what he's got.
Yeah. So if it's that. There is a program called Rogue ScanFix. Steve will have it up in a minute, but it's at bleeping.com/files/rogue-scan-fix.php, and it's specifically designed to remove programs like Virus Burst. So I'd be very careful with that program. It's not for beginners. That particular little program is definitely not for beginners, but that's the only one I know of that will remove it. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And 43 minutes after the hour, this is Soundbites.
Talking about the security tango, I just want to let... We've said this, you know, a number of times. And at the bottom of the security tango is a link to get the step-by-step procedures by my lovely wife, Lorraine Lynch. Well, folks, here's one word to let you know. She is not technical support. So requesting the sheet is about the only thing she's going to do. She's good moral support. She can sympathize with you if you're having issues. But for as far as asking her questions on how to solve other things, don't waste your time. She will simply email it to you. You have to either call the show or email us in the soundbite forum.
Well, we don't want to go that far. Yeah, post messages in the forum, and you'll have people with answers. We don't
or actually, try to call us.
We don't actually respond to individual emails because we have businesses.
We
do
don't.
That.
Right. Well, yes, right.
No, we do. As far as the soundbites webpage, we do have where if we can. We answer questions, or you know, on a weekly basis.
I had the thought of putting up some sort of forum on the Security Tango site specifically for security stuff, and I haven't done that. I do have a blog up there. I'd like to put a little personal plug in for my blog, Nick's blog, on the Security Tango site. I talk about various security issues only on that particular site, but that's up there. So if you've got nothing to do for the next few hours, you can read my my blog stuff. Speaking of viruses and spam and all of those things, the courts have blocked a request to shut down the Spam House domain. Spam House, SPAMHAUS, is one of the RBLs, real-time blacklists. What happens is in many places when you get an email, they block it immediately off of the real-time blacklist. Places like Spam House maintain a list of all the sites that are spammers. So if you get an email, the spammers are blocked. So you don't even see them. They don't even come to your mailbox. We do that, for example, in the College of Business at RIT, the E. Philip Saunders College of Business at the Rochester Institute of Technology, where I work. However, one of the companies, Spam House, was sued by E360 Insight, which, by the way, is an email marketing company. They do spam because Spam House blocked them.
They don't do the legal definition of spam, though.
Right, right. They won against Spam House in U.S. District Court, Northern District of Illinois, and the ruling called for Spam House to remove 360 from its blacklist. And then they decided that the E360 asked the U.S. court to force the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers to suspend the domain name. There seems to be a small problem with that, of course, for two reasons. One is the judge said that was stupid. But the other problem, of course, is these idiots sued them in the United States. Spam House is in England. So pretty much there's no jurisdiction there. I don't know what these people were thinking. Well, I know what they were thinking. The laws, the anti-spam laws in England are much, much more stringent than they are here. Clearly, the lawmakers in England are much more concerned about the effect of spam on the voters than our people are. Suing them in England would have done no good whatsoever because they would not have won. Our next caller is Jeff from Seneca Falls, New York. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Gentlemen, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a Sony camcorder and a laptop with Pinnacle Studio 9 on it. So I'm trying to get into the video editing game.
Right.
My problem is this Sony camera allows me to basically copy video to a memory stick in the camera, which then really in turn converts it to MPEG, and then I could just basically plug it into my laptop and it'll just see it as a drive, and I can just copy that to my laptop. Where I have a problem is if I want to go direct video right to the Pinnacle software, basically it asks for FireWire. Now
you probably have to use the Sony software designed for that camera. And then once you get it into the computer, you might be able to pass it over to Pinnacle.
Yeah.
Well, now I've already copied, but I've done it both ways. With the MPEG, that's no problem. It's video, sound, everything. When I do it with the USB to Pinnacle, I get the video, but I get no sound.
Well, USB is not FireWire.
Right. I know. I realize that. What I'm saying is, do you think the problem is that if I use FireWire, get a PCMCIA, FireWire port, and then FireWire the Sony to the laptop, that's really where the sound is disappearing,
I suppose
sound?
It's possible. What brand is your laptop?
It's a Toshiba.
And what model is the camera?
It's a Sony TRV25.
How old is this laptop?
Oh, I bought it within the last year.
It should have FireWire on it somewhere.
Yeah. Well,
check your manual.
No. I'm sorry. It's a Sony camcorder. Sony doesn't use the trade name FireWire, which is an Apple trademark. They use the trade name iLink.
Right. Okay.
And then the generic.
Also, IEEE 1394.
Right. 1394 is the generic name.
But all of those are the same thing.
Yeah.
FireWire, iLink, and IEEE 1394. I'll almost guarantee you've got an IEEE 1394 connection on that laptop. You just didn't know that was the same thing.
It's probably a mini 4-pin connector, so it doesn't look like
right.
The big 6-pin connectors.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, at 50 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Wham, Sean.
And this is Soundbites. Our next caller is Dick in Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
I have a website that I go into occasionally, and I went into it last night, and it's come up hacked, and then a lot of foreign writing afterwards, which, of course, I couldn't read.
Right.
And then I tried some of my other websites. I went to them. They were just fine. Does that sound like a website problem?
Yes, absolutely. It has nothing to do with you. Is this your website? You own it?
Yeah. My what?
Is this your website? Do you own this website?
No, it's somebody else's.
Yes, they got hacked. It has nothing to do with you other than telling them about it, and I'm sure they already know.
Okay.
There's nothing you can do about it.
It's on my computer because everything else worked fine.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dick.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Bye. Our next caller is Marty from Niagara Falls. Slowly we turn. Welcome, Marty. What's your question?
Good morning, guys. Going along with the guy that called up a little bit with the Dell laptop, we have a similar situation, but you didn't kind of answer anything. It gets about halfway into loading when you first start it up, and it just freezes solid. Nothing you can do. There's I can't even get it to start into safe mode.
Again, well, like, halfway into loading, do you get to the part where it says Windows is loading and you get the little lights across the bottom?
It'll start doing that, and then it just freezes up, or sometimes it doesn't get that far, or sometimes it...
So, but
that's probably a hard drive. If you're getting at least the BIOS and the boot up that it's attempting to, you know, find all the components in it, you're actually seeing something on the screen.
And this happens in both safe mode and regular mode.
I can't even get safe mode.
Safe mode happens long before you get to that point.
No, but he won't if the hard drive is going.
Or so Windows is corrupted.
So if you keep hitting the F8 key as you boot up, you never get to
nothing.
Okay, it's a hard drive then.
It'll freeze solid.
Sounds like a hard drive issue. There's a couple of things you can do about it. One, take a baseball bat to it. Secondly, take it to somebody like Dave or Steve who can run SpinRite on it and at least see what the problem might be. But it's likely you're looking at a new hard drive. Now, if you've got backups of all your data, you don't care. If you don't, then again, you're going to bring it to somebody like Dave or Steve who can run SpinRite on the disk and at least try to get some of the data off, but nobody's going to promise.
No, they can't, you know, I mean, unless you want to, you know, have the drive, which you got to send it off to other companies that literally take the hard drive apart.
They have
in
a clean
room.
White spacesuits, the whole bit. But you're looking at $1,000 minimum.
Yeah.
Just to look at it.
Well,
they have a dealer referral program, so that normally there's a $250 deposit.
Yeah.
If you use our dealer referral number, they won't charge you the $250.
Same with me, yeah. They give you a discount.
But they estimate to recover a hard drive is about $1,000.
Right.
And no guarantee of what they'll recover.
Right.
Or
so let this cautionary tale remind each and every one of you this afternoon, back up. Our next caller is Art. From Rochester, New York. Welcome, Art. What's your question?
I'm thinking of purchasing a new computer.
Good for you.
My current computer would work fine. It has Windows XP with Service Pack 2. I have run a small business. I don't want to have to reload all my programs from the disks. Is there a way to transfer the programs from the old?
No. You can sort of. You can. Windows has the file settings and transferred wizard. We'll transfer your settings, but not your programs.
Yeah, the programs have to be re-registered in the registry.
If everything is working on your old computer, you can just move that hard drive to the new computer.
But then
you'll have to worry about drivers for the new motherboard and new resources.
Yeah, but the minute you put a different hard drive, if you move your old hard drive into a new machine, it's all new hardware.
And
so you've got to install Windows all over again over itself.
Sometimes. If you're going from XP to XP, I've been able to do it.
You
do have to call Microsoft to reactivate it because it thinks you're trying to steal Windows.
Yeah, but what I have found, though, is if you're going from one motherboard in one machine, and it's a totally different motherboard. It's got to be the exact motherboard in another machine. You've got to reinstall because Windows XP, when it sets it up, looks for all that specific hardware in there.
And doesn't look for it again the next time it boots up. Once it's installed, it doesn't look to see, do I need to load new motherboard drivers?
Right, and if it's already in a different machine, it's going to fail on you. So the plain and simple of it is reinstall the program.
Right, and of course, once Vista's out, you'll only ever be able to do that once.
Yep.
Then there is no more re-registration. You have to buy a new copy of Vista. You re-register. You can re-register once.
That alone is going to really tick a lot of people off.
Well, that's
what happens if your hard drive crashes?
Oh well, you get one crash.
Coincidence—that's the word I don't want. On the Macintosh Migration Assistant does transfer all your programs to the new computer.
Right.
So that's another step ahead we have over
there. You go.
Users.
All right, we are done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everybody to whose call we did not get. Call in earlier next week. The only thing we can tell you at this point, we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. We will be back here next week. At 11 a.m. every Sunday, whether we want to be rain or shine, we will be here for you. Thank you all very much. Don't forget to vote in the poll, sound bites. Don't forget to go take a look at AskNick.com. I'm Nick Francesco. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Sound Bites.